The FCC also, on occasion, finds itself at the center of the news. And I can tell you from my own personal experience that it is no fun to be on the receiving end of phone calls from the SCMP, Reuters, RTHK, AFP, Apple Daily, you name it. Especially when it's late on Saturday night, they're ringing your mobile and they want to know if Thaksin Shinawatra is going to be on stage on the following Monday. You can think of other examples as well. But I also know that the chief executive and most senior government officials appreciate that media freedom is one of Hong Kong's most valuable assets. Something like the rule of law distinguishes this city from would-be rivals on the mainland and elsewhere in the region. I remember one recent media briefing with the chief executive where there were the usual combative exchanges. But at the end of the briefing, the chief executive's final words to us, and he often says this, he says, you guys keep on writing. We do keep on writing, and I'm sure many of us will be writing about the chief executive's remarks today. The title of his talk is A Dialogue with Donald, the Future of the Past, and I can't think of a better venue for the chief executive to speak about heritage preservation, which has emerged as a real and controversial political issue over recent years. Mr. Chief Executive, thank you for coming to the FCC today.
Thank you, Tom. I must say, I've been exceedingly thrilled today by three things. First of all, I was thrilled to be referred to as part of the entertainment. I've been referred to as all sorts of things, but that sort of expectation or description is very endearing. The second thing is, I was thrilled also by the size of the number of people attending today, because the last time when I had a rather longish chat with another group of people, half of the audience walked out. And why would I have the pleasure and the honor of this large crowd here today? And the third thing, of course, is, oh, see, look at this gentleman all wearing bow ties. So I am indeed fascinated and I really relish this occasion. And of course, I must warn myself by the remarks of Tom just now that we have too many journalists here in relation to the number of politicians, of targets they want to aim at. So at the end of the day, I have to be very careful in what I'm going to say. Anyway, this is FCC. This is freedom of speech, isn't it? This is a time I can say from my heart. Well, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having me to speak to you today and to help the club mark its 60th anniversary year. I would like to offer my belated congratulations to the new FCC board, which I'm sure will continue to play a pivotal role in encouraging journalistic excellence and precision and defending press freedom, not just here in Hong Kong, but throughout the region. A vote of thanks also to the outgoing board, who renegotiated the lease of these landmark premises. And without their efforts, we might not be meeting here today, although I must say there was a sympathetic landlord. That helped a bit. But it's no exaggeration to say that Hong Kong is a better place because of the international media presence in our city. The FCC adds institutional strength to that equation. We want Hong Kong to continue developing as a region's media hub, where news, ideas, information flow as freely and as unfettered as possible. Indeed, this is one of our major strengths, a jealously guarded freedom in society and a crucial ingredient of our global competitiveness. Hong Kong is also a better place because of all the preservation work, the adaptive reuse that has allowed lovely old buildings such as this to remain in excellent condition, and in this case, a center for creative endeavor in the city. As we are celebrating the club's milestone anniversary, I thought that today would be a good opportunity for me to talk about the past, or more specifically, how we are preserving our past for future generations. Now I know there are some people who believe that the government has not done enough in this regard. Indeed, to a certain extent in the past, this was true. We did not do enough to actively look for ways to preserve or creatively use some of our built heritage. And indeed, some of the very beautiful buildings have been demolished in the 50s and in the 60s. But today, it is equally true to say that this government has ushered in a new era for Hong Kong as far as protecting our built heritage is concerned. Let me explain why, and let's start with the recent past. The demise of the old Star Ferry Terminal at the end of year 2006 was a pivotal movement for Hong Kong society. It unleashed a wave of nostalgia about the good old days and resulted in much discussion and soul searching about heritage protection generally, not only among the people of Hong Kong, among corporates, but also within government. It also resulted in much soul searching by me and my governing team about Hong Kong's development model and how to best balance the needs of a modern metropolis while meeting greater public expectations to preserve our built heritage. The people themselves poured out their hearts. The government listened, and then we acted. That is why, in my past two policy addresses, I have stressed the importance of progressive development, which includes, as a core element, the promotion of community development through revitalization of our built heritage. For decades, we have erected buildings, roads, bridges, tunnels as fast as we could. By and large, it was the right thing for Hong Kong at that time. We will not be the world city we are today were we not for this massive investment in infrastructure. Not many people would argue with our public housing program. The development of new towns, Sha Tin, Tai Po, Tuen Mun, the building of our clean and efficient MTR system, or the airport core program. And I don't think people will argue with the need to develop a world-class integrated waterfront within Victoria Harbour to make the best possible use of West Kowloon Cultural District and to develop a new green community at Kai Tak or to revitalize Kwun Tong District. But there comes a time in the development of a modern society like Hong Kong when people must stop and ask, have we gone too far? Or are we sacrificing too much for another skyscraper? Or should we do more to protect our heritage? For Hong Kong, that turning point came in late 2006 and early 2007. This was the past shaping the future. Now let me talk about the future of the past. In 2007, my policy address that year was entitled A New Direction for Hong Kong. It reflected a new approach to developing a quality city and a quality life. We had heard loud and clear the desire of Hong Kong people to do more to protect, preserve, revitalize, and reuse our built heritage. And over the past 18 months, we have achieved quite a lot in this regard, due in no short measure to the commitment and common sense of our Secretary for Development, Carrie Lam, and her team. We have taken a new holistic approach by combining policy, partnership, pragmatism, and passion. Added to that formula has been a firm fiscal commitment to ensure that we have the resources needed to take action and generate tangible results. Since January last year, heritage impact assessments have been mandatory requirements on all works projects. And for the first time, we have a clear heritage protection policy that is underpinned by Commissioner for Heritage Office that was set up in April last year. We have been much more proactive in trying to find new and creative ways to make the best use of vacant heritage sites through our revitalizing historic buildings through partnership scheme. This scheme allows non-profit-making organizations to apply for the adaptive reuse of government-owned historic buildings to run social enterprises. The scheme is backed by strong government financial support, which includes nominal rent, a one-off capital grant for major renovation work, and a non-recurring grant for initial operation. We have initially earmarked 1.5 billion Hong Kong dollars for the scheme. We received a very encouraging and overwhelming response to the first batch of buildings included in the scheme. In all, 114 applications for 7 buildings. The adaptive reuse of these buildings will include a boutique hotel, a Chinese Contemporary Arts Institute, an international youth hostel, a traditional Chinese medicine center, tourism and Chinese cultural center cum museum, and a school for arts and design. These projects will inject new life and vitality in the buildings and surrounding communities, as well as enrich our cultural and tourism assets. And here's a news flash, I think. The second batch of 5 buildings will soon be launched. They are the Old Tai Po Police Station, the former Fan Ling Magistracy, the Blue House, the famous Blue House in Wan Chai, and Wong Oak in Sha Tin, and stone houses in Kowloon City. Our new heritage policy also aims to strike a pragmatic balance between protecting historic buildings and respecting private property rights. We recognize that economic incentives will often be needed to encourage private owners to preserve their historic buildings. The Keng Yin Lei case is a good example. We have successfully preserved Keng Yin Lei as a monument through a non-in-situ land exchange. An adjacent lot of the same size and development parameters will be granted to the owner. In exchange, the owner will restore Keng Yin Lei to the high standards required by the Antiquities and Monuments Office, and then surrender it to government for preservation and revitalization. The first phase of restoration work has been completed, and a final phase is expected to finish by the end of next year. We will ensure that the restored mansion is open to the public and to visitors, and that people will be able to learn about its history and its architecture. Another good example is Jazzville, which is a grade 3 building on Port Fulham Road. Earlier this month, the Town Planning Board approved a conservation cum development scheme put forward by the owners of the site. Under the scheme, we will be able to preserve the historic mansion while allowing some public access. Earlier this year, in February, an expert panel together with the AMO, monument or office, completed a heritage assessment of 1,444 pre-1950 buildings to identify those with high heritage value. This was the most comprehensive and professional assessment yet of our built heritage. The AMO has now submitted the assessment results and proposed gradings to the Antiquities Advisory Board for consideration. The number of proposed Grade 1 to Grade 3 historic buildings has more than doubled, while the number of historic buildings under each grade has also increased. The Advisory Board has just about wrapped up a 4-month public consultation on the proposals and is working very hard to confirm the gradings by the end of the year. Well, incidentally, the FCC building has been proposed for an upgrade to grade 1 status, which puts it just one step away from being declared a monument. And that would be a very different proposition, I suppose. Based on what I've heard, in fact, on the question of monument, what journalists like to call informed sources, there are probably a few FCC members who have been propping up the bar for so long they can be identified and qualified as well. We also understand that we might need to provide financial help to the owners of historic buildings. That is why we have introduced a scheme which provides a special grant for an owner to carry out maintenance work. The ceiling for each application has recently been raised to $1 million. Engaging the public is also a vitally important aspect of our new approach to heritage conservation and reuse. We have devoted quite a lot of effort to public awareness and education activities, and I encourage everyone to look at our website, www.heritage.gov.hk, and to give us your feedback through that channel. This year, we are concentrating especially on our youth and students to help learn more about Hong Kong, about its history, and appreciate our heritage. Just 2 days ago, on June 13, we celebrated National Cultural Heritage Day, which included free postage for a series of postcards featuring historic buildings that have been drawn by local students. I have some of the postcards here if anyone would like them. Quite pretty. The FCC and adjacent Fringe Club buildings are excellent example of adaptive reuse. In fact, this area lies at the heart of a historical heritage trail that stretches from Flagstaff House in Hong Kong Park to the terrace steps of Wing Lee Street just beyond popular Soho areas. As the crow flies, about 1.5 kilometers and perhaps a bit longer on foot. Consider the built heritage in this area. We can also appreciate the fine work that has been done by previous administrations and building owners to preserve and protect our society. St. John Cathedral, the Hallam in May, French Mission Building, Government House, Bishop's House just across the road, which incidentally is currently subject to an exciting revitalization plan by the Hong Kong Sheng Kung Hui. Memo Temple, Kum Tong Hall, the Old Pathological Institute, and a little further up the hill, we have the Catholic Cathedral in Kane Road, and O'Hellair Synagogue, both of which are UNESCO Award winners. Looking ahead a few years, we're excited about the $1.8 billion revitalization project for the Old Central Police Station compound. I'm sure that the Jockey Club will once again live up to its reputation for excellence and provide us with a new landmark attraction and we'll be all proud of, and which will add even more vitality and business opportunities to this area. Similarly, we are determined to protect the original site of the Central School, which is at the junction of Hollywood Road and Aberdeen Street, which has the potential to form a heritage cluster with other historic sites in Central and Sheung Wan. It is suitable for a range of reuse purposes, including education, creative industries, cultural and tourism facilities. I'm personally much attached to that building where I grew up. We'll work closely with the Urban Renewal Authority to optimize the design of their Staunton Street, Wing Lee Street project to bring out further the street ambience and the heritage significance of that locality. Well, before I finish, let me share with you some personal recollections that I hope will give you some insight into Donald Zhang's commitment to heritage protection. When I was a kid, all of this area around here was my backyard. I used to come down here to the old dairy farm depot with my brothers and friends, and we watched the scenery workmen haul blocks of ice down the precarious steps of Wyndham Street all the way down to Queen's Road. We were always hoping they were given opportunities to ride on those ice blocks and careen down the road. But we never had the childish pleasure of seeing that happen, unfortunately. But that was a sight. When my father was working in Central Police Station, I used to go up and visit him at work from time to time. There was often talk of ghosts stalking the corridors. And occasionally, we treated to a movie night in the grounds that had been organized for the officers. Hollywood Road in those days was an eclectic mix of kung fu shows, fortune tellers, and people telling old folk tales. I used to play table tennis at Mambo Temple. They were charging exorbitant sum of rent of $1 an hour. That was quite a large sum in those days. I lived in the old police barrack quarters in Aberdeen Street, and with my family until Selina and I were married in 1969. Indeed, I stayed there for nearly two decades. So it warms my heart to see the way that FCC and the Fringe Club have maintained the good looks since they were first built in the 1890s. The way in which they have been maintained and preserved serves as a model for the adaptive reuse of our built heritage in Hong Kong. As I said, this is indeed a new beginning for heritage protection in Hong Kong. Over the past 18 months, we have moved quickly on a number of fronts to live up to the expectations of the community. We have introduced a new heritage policy, a new institutional framework. This has made it clear to all how we will protect and revitalize our historic buildings. We have made substantial financial commitments to underpin these policies and the revitalization work. We are taking action to protect buildings in dangers and to bring old buildings back to life. And we have approached our mission with passion and common sense because we know that that's what the people expect us to do. This is my home. This is where I grew up. And it's my personal mission to ensure that we will protect and love and restore and reuse our built heritage for generations to come. Thank you very much. Incidentally, hearing the radio today and watching the television last evening, I want to say something more on a completely different subject. Really, it touches my heart and the hearts of many people in Hong Kong. I will say this in English, and for making advantage of the audience here, particularly the press here, you will allow me to say a few words in Cantonese as well. I have been following the recent developments of the relocation of the Christian Zhongsheng College. I watched on the TV the town hall meeting in Mui Wo yesterday and noticed how emotional responses from some local residents. Many NGOs in Hong Kong are devoted to rehabilitating young drug abusers. They deserve our full support. As a father, I know only too well that no parent would want to see their children abuse drugs. But young people do sometimes go astray. When our children make mistakes, they need forbearance. Just a little help and guidance from us can make a big difference on their lives. I hope Hong Kong society generally, and the Mui Wo community in particular, can embrace these young people with love and give them a second chance.
我十分关心政生书院的事件发展，昨天我看到梅窝举行了咨询会的情况，而且注意到部分居民的情绪的反应，社会上面有很多有志愿的机构是帮我们青年人戒毒的，他们值得我们的支持的，我自己都是爸爸。 为人的父母都想自己子女不想他们染上毒瘾，但青年人的成长过程里面有些不能走上了歪路，他们愿意返回正轨，
但都要大家俾佢多啲鼓励。我哋需要社会嘅包容、接纳。喺佢哋最需要帮助嘅时候，我哋肯扶佢哋一下，佢哋可以重新咁起步。香港一直系一个守望相助、守望相助同埋包容嘅社会。香港人一向系愿意系彼此扶持嘅，互相爱护。对曾经误入歧途嘅年青人，我都希望，而且我好相信香港市民，包括梅窝嘅市民，都俾佢哋一啲机会，而且用爱心去帮我哋重新做人。多谢晒你哋 ，Thank you very much。
Thank you very much. The chief executive is going to take questions from the podium. Please identify yourself when you ask a question. Obviously, as time is limited, please limit yourself to one question and try and keep it short and to the point. I'm going to exercise head table prerogative and ask the first one. Mr. Chief Executive, you referred to the public controversy concerning the Star Ferry and also Queen's Pier, something that took a lot of people by surprise. Wouldn't a more democratic political system make it easier for the government to anticipate and then manage such controversies? And isn't this an issue you can cite in arguing for a more aggressive move towards democracy in Hong Kong?
Well, we have a very confirmed timetable now agreed with the central government for the implementation of universal suffrage in Hong Kong. And what we need to do as a community to work hard and make sure we have the best system and to be delivered to the benefit of Hong Kong people and hold universal suffrage in the year 2017 for the chief executive and thereafter and hold the same universal suffrage election for the legislature. That is what is enshrined in the basic law, and that should be the target we should be working for.
Question from Steve Vines.
Chief Executive, I was very worried when I saw the title of your talk, The Future of the Past, that you were going to be talking about the electoral system, not the heritage. But can I ask you, how do you feel when you see people in the streets wearing T-shirts saying, Donald Jung does not represent us? I'm not asking you about the specific incident which apparently gave rise to that, but just your response to people expressing that point of view.
Now that reflects the diversity of the city and the richness of our community. All I can say is I fully understand Hong Kong's people's feelings and views about June 4th and respect what they have done.
Fardine, in the front, please.
Can't hear you.
I'm from the BBC. I often have trouble with microphones. I'm voting England. Today in the papers, there's an advertisement from a group of political names saying that we should love China and love Hong Kong and we should come together for social harmony. I'm not quite sure what else it's saying. But are you concerned that there's a whole list of people there that did not actually say that we should support Donald?
We should support
you.
We should support you. Me. Well, I think I'm a very fortunate to be in my position, and I'm very fortunate that many people do support what I'm trying to do. But I also have enormous respect for people who disagree with me from time to time. And that is the strength, as I said, of a society. And I am always take on my job with humility, taking care in listening to what people say to me quietly, loudly, openly, and discreetly. And what is important is to make a sincere response to those requests. And that's what myself and my team are trying to do.
Let's move across the Irish Sea from the Beeb to Irish Times, Anna Healy Fenton.
Anna Healy Fenton, FCC board member. You very elegantly injected Moy Woe into a discussion on heritage. a lot of the people of Moy Wo are worried about having the drug centre right in the middle of the town. Would you be happy to have a drug rehabilitation centre in the gardens of Government House?
Well, that's difficult to do because there's a monument there, and you cannot erect something there. But I think it is important for us to realize it's a fact of life that young people do go astray, and some people need special help in a special institution of some kind. And we are trying to find out exactly the size of a problem. Once you have discovered it, and it is not easy to find out, and this is rather controversial whether we should or we should not find out. But I think a community as a whole, particularly with ethnic Chinese community, want to know the size of this particular problem and do not wish drug abuse to spread. If that is the case, we need community effort. An effort not only by establishing some treatment center in the middle of nowhere in an offshore island, all of us, whether near Government House or everywhere, we have to take this on as a fact of life and make some contribution towards its solution. What besides it is, I'm not sure. But it is important for us to realize it is not only a question of Moy Wo residents who need our help, or this particular group who wants to stay there also need our help, but each and every one of us, we have to focus on this emerging big problem for Hong Kong. How to help our young people who have now gone astray, and how we will help them to salvage themselves. I think we all have a duty to do. Having something located near you, I think, is the least sacrifice we should make.
Francis, and then there's a question in the back after that.
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. Chief Executive, once 2011 rolls around, attention is inevitably going to turn toward whoever the hopeful successors will be to you for Chief Executive. And that's going to be basically a lame duck period. From now to 2010 is when you can really, through 2010, is when you can really get things done. So over the next 18 months or so, 2010 included, what are your priorities and why?
Well, I never accept the lame duck theory. You charted out something you need to do during your term of office, which I did in 2007. In my manifesto, and then later on reflected in a very, I hope, is concise and clear policy address. I'm going to finish those tasks, and I will spend but I need each and every minute of it, right through the summer to 2012. So come what may, I do what I promised Hong Kong people, and my team will help me achieve that. My priorities are clear. They were set out in that policy address. I know you might have forgotten it, Francis. Just go back and refer to it. I talk about the 10 infrastructure projects. I talk about the philosophy underpinning that, and particularly the need for forbearance and a progressive way of balancing interest in community. Immediately, my immediate problem, of course, here now is to ensure the economy will recover itself. And then we're going to be stronger at the end of it than we were last year when this problem all began. And of course, we have all this swine flu with us, which will be with us for some time, and that needs immediate attention as well. But all those incidents would not derail me from implementing those pledges I made in my policy address in 2007, which included a whole host of things, including finding a best arrangement for 2012 for elections, and at the same time finishing the infrastructure programs, the 10 major ones that starting on some of them, finishing some other ones, but launching all of them during this period.
Chief Executive, if I can quickly follow, is that a statement from you that you will keep your promise to have the proposals for 2012 in LegCo by December?
Well, we'll start consultation in December. That is what we're going to do.
You can't see her, but in the back, Charmaine Chan from SCMP. Charmaine, you raise your hand.
Can't see her. I hope I can hear her.
You will hear her in just a second.
A basic question.
Basic.
Why aren't all graded historic buildings protected by law from demolition? Why only the monuments?
Well, I think most historic buildings are preserved. And, of course, you need... You you need to have some flexibility in this. But as far as I'm concerned, I really hope all our historic buildings are not to be demolished. All the policy are geared up to conservation and preservation of these buildings. And they could be modified somehow, but historic buildings are not to be demolished. That is the general proposition.
There's a question from the back left there, please.
Great Dieb, Cranwan Sellers. Back to heritage on this. More statement than a question. To show Donald Jong's genuine feeling for Hong Kong, 10 years ago, before heritage was even on the feature map here in Hong Kong, he came up with an idea to get the military historical sites in Hong Kong at least utilized and restored. This resulted in both Hong Kong barracks being taken over by the Asia Society and Cranwan Sellers going into the place called Little Hong Kong, the last place to surrender to Hong Kong, to the Japanese in World War II. So 10 years ahead of your time, just a statement to say 40,000 people have actually visited that living museum. And sometimes you do succeed and sometimes people do really appreciate it. So from my side, congratulations, E.
Okay, no question. John, in the front, please.
Thanks, Tom. Cody, Laura, and myself are part of the Central and Western Concern Group. It's been fairly vocal about the developments happening in Central and Western. And you talked eloquently about your childhood here. And you left out one important heritage site, which is the Graham Street Market, which has been there since 1842, 43, 44. It's been there 150 years, and it's about to have a three-story podium built on it by the URA. Any comment?
Well, in most of these conservation things, we have to take it to making sure the essence of heritage is retained, and at the same time, we want to make sure that it will not be shoddy and dilapidated. At the same time, we have to make sure that people may make use of these areas. Of course I know this well. In fact, I know many of the elderly hawkers who sell their wares there as well. But the important thing is, whatever we do on conservation, there are people with different ideas. Urban Renewal Authority put up a proposal. This is for consultation. Let's discuss and talk about it. But the important thing is, sometimes conservation doesn't mean that you just leave it as it is and preserve it as it is. That would not be a very good idea. It must be something. In a process of conservation, you also revitalize the place. For instance, here, this, to me, Central Police Station was rather useless if it's left as it is. You can hardly go in there. You go in there, it's not very lovely, not many things to see. But you have to revitalize it somehow, making sure people want to go. And see for themselves what it was like. While they're enjoying some of the things who might be allowed to happen there. So I think that's a concept of how we tackle various markets, not only there. In fact, there's Staunton Market at the back and various other little markets all over the place. But you can see how this has changed. I'm sure at the end of the day, through collective wisdom, we'll have the best scheme for the area.
Sorry, I know there's... A lot of people have questions, but we really only have time for one more. Can we, to Jimmy, in the front here, please.
Mr. Chief Executive, CP Ho, ION. I'm just following up on Vodin's question. The article that was, the advertisement that was published this morning, do you or your office have any prior knowledge of it before its publication?
All I can say is I read it for the first time. I have not read it very, very carefully, in fact. I didn't have time to read it carefully, but I will try to do so because it has caught so much of your attention. I might have missed it, but now you have mentioned it, both of you, I go back and read it.
I think we can fit in just one more, and it's only fair to give the working press here a chance. James Palmford from Reuters.
Hi, Chief Executive. I'd like to ask you, the Department of Justice last week, they came out with a statement saying they wouldn't prosecute two bodyguards hired by Robert Mugabe to protect his daughter in Hong Kong. I'd just like to ask what the Hong Kong SAR's policy on Mr. Mugabe is, given a level of international concern towards this. There is this need, it seems, out there to clarify, you know, exactly how willing Hong Kong is or not to allow Mr. Mugabe to build and forge deeper links in Hong Kong through his family. And we've seen in the run-up to June 4th that a number of Chinese individuals were barred entry to the territory, but the Hong Kong SAR seems willing to allow the Mugabe family to move in and out freely. So would you mind just giving a sense for how you see the level of access he is allowed at the moment in Hong Kong, and clarify that? Thank you.
Well, I cannot talk about individual cases. When you talk about the prosecution case, I have to be very careful what I say. Under the basic laws, quite clearly, is the Secretary for Justice is responsible for prosecution, and he's jealously guarding that. And nobody, including myself, can interfere in the prosecution decision. So it is, in fact, a manifestation of the best rule of law in Hong Kong. And I'm sure the Secretary of Justice will answer a question specifically on individual cases if you think it's appropriate to do so. But as far as Hong Kong is concerned, everywhere has its own immigration regime. Hong Kong has its own immigration regime, which has worked reasonably well and respected by most other countries. And all I can assure you that we would attach enormous importance to the rule of law, and particularly every of our immigration officers will act according to law.
Please join me in thanking the Chief Executive for speaking today. We'd love to have him speak longer, but he's got a very busy schedule.
I left some postcards here about, these are beautiful pictures drawings by our young kids about heritage sites here. You may wish to have some of them.
And we're also very, very happy to have one of our grade one historical monuments from the bar, Jake Vanderkamp, present the gift.
This was unfortunately wrapped up in time, but you can see exactly what it is. My neck. I should put this back with a rather T-shirt. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you so much. May I also take this away as a memento?
Yes. By all means.
I can take it for notes when being interviewed.
I'm sure that